Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest today is Mike Eckel, senior correspondent here at RFERL. Welcome, Mike. Thanks for being on the show again.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Today we're going to talk about two somewhat related matters. One is the impeachment inquiry in the United States and its possible ramifications for Russia and for U.S. policy on Russia, with obviously Ukraine also in the mix. The other is the path toward not necessarily peace in eastern Ukraine, but at least talks on peace. Now, on the impeachment, public hearings in the inquiry that could lead to the impeachment of President Donald Trump continue this week, with former special envoy to Ukraine Kurt Volker and National Security Council official Alexander Vindman among those due to testify on Tuesday, Ambassador to the EU Gordon Sondland among others on Wednesday, and Trump's former Europe and Russia advisor in the NSC Fiona Hill is up on Thursday. Now, Mike, you wrote an article recently, last week, I think, focusing on the fact that while Ukraine is at center stage in the impeachment inquiry due to Trump's July 25th phone call with President Volodymyr Zelensky, the whole process will affect U.S. ties with Russia as well as with Ukraine. What's your take on this? I guess one question would be, do you think the Kremlin and Russian President Vladimir Putin are happy about the focus on Ukraine in the impeachment inquiry or not?
Well, without question, Putin and the Kremlin are happy that Ukraine is in the crosshairs in the American political process, and it's not Russia. Recall that for more or less the first 2 years of the Trump presidency, and even going back into the election cycle of 2016, it was all about Russia. It was the Mueller report. It was Russia's alleged meddling. It was the U.S. Intelligence Council community's conclusions. It was the Republican Senate Intelligence Committee conclusions about Russia meddling. And now it's ironic or kind of an interesting twist that what has paved the groundwork for this ongoing impeachment inquiry is Ukraine and the interactions between the Trump administration and the Ukrainian administration, specifically, as you referred to, the July 25th phone call between Trump and Zelensky. So, yes, the Kremlin is probably very happy that they are not in center stage in the spotlight of these impeachment hearings in Washington. However, Russia is, of course, an active player in all this in kind of a convoluted way or an indirect way. The military aid that was held up by the Trump White House and then ultimately released after congressional pressure was intended for the Ukrainian armed forces to bolster their fight against Russia-backed separatists in eastern Ukraine, in the Donbass region and elsewhere.
Right.
So why is that important? Because the Americans have been mainly the primary supporter of and supplier of major military aid to Ukraine over the course of the conflict that erupted in 2014. The European Union, of course, European allies of the U.S. have given tons of money to Ukraine, but those programs have been aimed more at things like anti-corruption, government functioning, health infrastructure, things like that. It's the Americans that have been providing the military aid, the flak jackets, the night vision goggles, the counter battery mortars, the much written about Javelin anti-tank missiles. And that's what the Kremlin is paying attention to, is what the Americans not only are supplying literally but also figuratively. What's the symbolic support? What's the rhetoric coming out of Washington regarding Zelensky and the fight of the Ukrainian military against the pro-Russian forces, the Russia-backed separatists in eastern Ukraine? So So Russia is, of course, watching this very closely, and they are looking for cues or clues of what the U.S. will do with regards to the Ukrainian fight towards Russia in the coming months. The impeachment inquiry, to be sure, is distracting from many, many foreign policy discussions, not just in Ukraine and Europe, but in many other places around the world. So I don't think we're going to see any sort of real clarity on U.S. policy towards Ukraine or Russia anytime soon. But, you know, we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I was noting just last night watching some of the ways that that the Kremlin kind of spins the issue. One of the state TV shows in Russia last night, they had a segment about the impeachment hearings and something about the phone call. And I believe it is actually about the first phone call between Trump and Zelensky earlier after Zelensky won the election.
In April, I think.
In April, exactly. And so the announcer said something like, "Oh, you know, it's hard to listen to this call without a smile or without laughing." So you know, they use that the Russian kind of state media and officials use the focus on Ukraine, you know, as it's to kind of to belittle Ukraine and to, you know, make it seem like, look, you know, as you say, Russia was the focus for 2 years. Now, you know, it's Ukraine. So, you know, that's obviously, I think, helpful for the Kremlin on sort of just a PR level.
To be sure, you know, Russia wants to engage with the United States now. I mean, despite all the rhetoric, despite all the kind of finger pointing and throwing shade at Washington, Russia wants to engage with the U.S. And there are lots of issues that if you pay attention, close enough attention, you'll see that Russia is signaling they want to engage the U.S. on arms control, these arms control treaties that are fraying, possibly on the verge of collapse. They want to engage the U.S. on questions of the Middle East, and they certainly want to figure out a way to come to some understanding regarding Russia's presence in Eastern Europe, including Ukraine. So, you know, the absence of any sort of coherence or clarity regarding the U.S. foreign policy process in Washington now is frustrating, I think, for people in Moscow because, you know, they can't figure out which way the wind is blowing. And a lot of, you know, in Washington, we can't figure out which way the wind is blowing. And we won't for some time until this impeachment process plays out. And then the last thing to remember, of course, is we're going into an election year in the U.S. And foreign policy typically takes a back seat in the U.S. electoral process. So people are going to be campaigning. Russia will get mentioned, of course. Ukraine will get mentioned. But candidates are going to be campaigning on more issues that are closer to home for Americans. So, again, we'll see. We'll have even a continuation of a lack of clarity, I think, in the coming months.
Right. And I think, I mean, you know, it was hard. If Russia wants to engage, obviously that was hard to do when Russia was the focus of, you know, of attention in Washington. Now with Ukraine as the focus, it's still hard.
Exactly.
And it makes it harder when, you know, there's bipartisan support for Ukraine. And then that's very good to mention the election coming up. So, you know, that's just going to be a continued headache, presumably, for the Kremlin. One other point, sort of a side point I'd like to make about, I guess, the attention on Ukraine in the U.S. I mean, one thing, I think this is a country that many Americans know nothing about or knew nothing about.
Right.
And probably, you know, still do or still will. But, I think more Americans, when this is over, or even now, will actually be aware that Ukraine is an independent country and is not part of Russia. You know, I think this is a bit of a personal observation, but, I mean, people, highly educated people, you know, in recent years that I know have not known that.
Yes.
So I think, you know, just on one level with there being live TV about Ukraine, you know, every day, It's just something that's going to, to some degree, educate Americans on the basic situation over there.
And I think that's a good point from the Ukrainian perspective, is that this raises awareness of the plight that Ukraine is facing and has faced for the past 5 years since the conflict with Russia broke out, possibly going back 20 years, depending on how you look at Russian-Ukrainian relations. The fact that Ukraine's plight or situation is now prominent in the minds of America, and where there is the United States is a major supporter and backer of Ukraine's independence and sovereignty. I mean, that's a good thing for the long term prospects of Ukraine.
Yeah, it could be. Now I'd like to address our other topic, which is it's somewhat related in terms of it has to do with U.S. policy toward Russia and Ukraine, among other countries and among other things. I dislike the term Normandy format, but for the first time in more than 3 years, there's expected to be a meeting in this format, that is the meeting of the leaders of, or for the first time at such a level, the leaders of Ukraine, Russia, Germany, and France to discuss efforts to end the war in the Donbass, which recent UN figures say has killed as many as 13,200 people since 2014. Now, this meeting would also be the first between Putin and Zelensky, who took office in May. The French president's office said that the four will meet in Paris on December 9th, although it's unclear whether the Kremlin has kind of confirmed this date. There have been positive steps recently in any case. In any case, the Kremlin is at least saying a meeting before the end of the year. But positive steps have included pullbacks by forces, both Kiev's forces and the Russia-backed separatists in Donetsk and Luhansk regions. And Russia is returning, or I guess is to return, three Ukrainian boats today that it seized in a violent incident near the Kerch Strait a year ago. And less recently there were prisoner exchanges and some other steps. So, Mike, this is a bit of a broad question maybe, but do you think there are real prospects for progress towards peace now? I guess some have said this depends in large part on whether Putin is ready for it. Would you agree with that?
I certainly would agree with the latter part of that statement. From the Ukrainian perspective, Zelensky campaigned heavily on his promises, pledges to find a resolution to the war in eastern Ukraine. Ukrainians are sick of the war and have made that openly clear. And again, that's one of the reasons that Zelensky, that propelled Zelensky to such an overwhelming victory this spring. And as you noted, Zelensky has moved forward with some important, tangible, some more symbolic, some important steps to resolve the situation with Russia. The prisoner swaps, the troop pullbacks, sporadically conciliatory rhetoric. So, the Ukrainians are, Zelensky's ready to find some sort of meeting of the minds. The problem from Zelensky's perspective is that there's a vocal minority of people who have, nationalists, veterans groups who have fought tooth and nail in eastern Ukraine, who are vehemently opposed to any sort of conciliatory measures or concessions to Russia of any sort. And in fact, when I was in Kiev recently, I attended a march that included nationalist and some right-wing groups talking about capitulation and chanting no to capitulation, which is how these groups see some of Zelensky's moves. But to the latter part of your question, it does, to a large degree, depend on what the Kremlin wants and what Putin wants. Do they want peace in eastern Ukraine? Do they want a resolution to the conflict? And there's reasons to believe that they very much do. The conflict is a huge financial drain on Russian spending. I haven't seen the latest figures, but it's been a chunk of money that has been spent officially and unofficially by the Russian armed forces since the conflict erupted. And then there's also just the morale, the psychological aspect of the conflict, the idea of Russians coming back home in body bags and being buried in secret funerals, and veterans not receiving war pensions or disability payments. That's been a problematic issue for Russia in the past. And then there's just the fact that, you know, most Russians don't really feel this deep enmity towards Ukraine, and most Ukrainians don't feel this deep enmity towards Russia. There's all these cultural, linguistic, social, economic ties between the two countries, and it's not this kind of existential conflict that you might have seen 60 years ago with World War II. So people are tired of the war. And now, whether that will translate into Putin and the Kremlin making some concrete gestures that will be acceptable to Zelensky to move this Normandy format talks forward, I'm not sure. It's too early to say.
Yeah, and I guess those are good points. I guess a couple of things that I see as potential barriers. I mean, there are plenty of them, of course. But for one thing, I guess the Kremlin, in talking about these talks that will presumably happen in December, saying, well, you know, also Kiev really needs to talk to the separatists.
Yeah.
And then another is just the timing still of issues like the withdrawal of Russian forces and also other armed forces, and the handover of control over the border, the Ukrainian border with Russia in the areas that are now held by the Russia-backed separatists. I don't think there's clarity, you know, when Zelensky and others approved the kind of Steinmeier formula.
Yes,
there's a clear timing for the elections and things that happen around the elections in the Donbass. But
yes.
But I think there's disagreement about the withdrawal and control over the border, the timing of that. So whether that can be sort of finessed or agreed, you know, and then you, as you mentioned, you have the factor of the Ukrainians who already say Zelensky has capitulated. So, you know, a lot of potential barriers to real progress, I think.
The last thought I'll mention is, to bring it back to the Normandy format, is Europe also wants an end to this conflict. The French and the Germans want an end to this conflict. You know, people are sick of people, I should say. There are sizable segments of, particularly in the German economy, industrial segments that are very tired of the sanctions that were imposed upon Russia in response to the Ukraine war. And clearly there is a push to find a way to resolve this and get back to business with Russia. Now, whether that's a smart thing in the long run or not, given Russia's policies, that's a different discussion altogether. But I think Russia, France and Germany coming to the table at the Normandy format, there'll be a lot of pressure from them on Zelensky and on Putin to find some sort of deal and find a resolution to the conflict.
Yeah, absolutely. It does seem like there should be pressure on both sides. And, you know, so that will be interesting to watch when it does take place. All right. I think, well, let's wrap it up today for today. Thank you very much, Mike.
Yeah, you're welcome. My pleasure.
All right. Tune in next time. And also please have a look at my Week in Russia article, which comes out on Fridays. Thanks for listening.